You know, some of the biggest, most successful companies have been responsible for some of the biggest flops in product history. There was McDonald's Arch Deluxe, introduced in 1996. It was a burger targeted to adults with more sophisticated palates.
The best ingredients are just the start of a great burger. Crisp leaves of iceberg lettuce. The stone-ground mustard sauce. Mmm. The soft, comforting potato roll. I'm in the zone. All layered together in one symphony of taste.
The Arch Deluxe did not last long. Car enthusiasts may remember Ford's Edsel, known as the Titanic of automobiles.
Driving the 1958 Edsel is as easy as flicking a light switch. For Edsel's exclusive new teletouch drive, shifts electrically at a touch. It's a new idea that puts shifting where it belongs, so you can keep both hands safely at the wheel.
Only 64,000 of those cars were sold in the first year, and Ford lost $250 million. And of course, let's not forget one of the most notorious corporate blunders, New Coke.
A slam, a shout, it's a new way to see. It'll shake up the world, it's the way it should be. It's just how you feel when you know it's for real. It's a kick, it's a hit, it's a Coke. Coke is it.
But somebody did buy those products, maybe regrettably. A study suggests these people may be the kind of consumers who can help predict which products will fail by liking them. Catherine Tucker worked on that study. She's a marketing professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and we spoke with Catherine last year. Here's an excerpt from that conversation. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
And what a really painful word for this group of people, harbingers of failure.
Yes. Yes, well, I must admit, I like that term.
You do?
I do like that term because I think it really signals the extent to which they signal doom for any product development process. We wanted that aura of doom with our naming of them.
Okay. Explain to me how this works. These are people who, they have to be early adopters. They get in early, right?
That's right.
And they really like something, and then it fails.
That's right. So who they are is, we look at all people who adopt new products, and then we identify the people who, as a proportion of the new products they buy, tend to buy flop. And what we do is we then look at those group of people and see how they behave in the future. And we find that they keep on buying flops. So it's just not just that they buy new products, but they, when they buy new products, they buy the ones that flop consistently. And also what's remarkable about them is that their bad taste isn't just confined to one category. It's just not that they keep on buying bad toothpaste. But we see them buying toothpaste that flops, and then we see them buying laundry detergent that flops, and then we see them buying sodas that flop.
I'm laughing, but this is terrible. So Catherine, we went out into the streets of Atlanta and spoke with some people and asked them about some products they really liked that were discontinued. So take a listen here.
Oh, Hi-C Ecto Cooler. Do you remember that? That was great. You felt, I don't know, it was kind of like a cool kid thing to have. Ecto Cooler with your Dunkaroos, I guess, at lunch.
One product I miss is the Carnation Breakfast Bars. I think it was the original energy bar. It wasn't as sweet as and sugary as a lot of the energy bars are now. You know, it would help me keep from eating candy, and it was more nutritious than candy.
Sprite Remix was very great. It was very good, even though I don't really drink sodas anymore, but back then I just liked Sprite Remix because, you know, you had the fruit punch kind of orange thing in it. They brought the LeBron type of Sprite out, but it's not the same as Sprite Remix.
It seems like the products that I enjoy the most are always being discontinued. There was a chicken sauce flavor at KFC years and years ago that I loved. I couldn't go like a week without stopping by and having some. My best memory of the sauce was just going to KFC to eat it with my husband, because at the time we were newlyweds, and so it was just one of the things that we would go and do together.
Now, all these people mentioned, Catherine, food, but from your description, it sounds like it's not just food that these people like and it ends up being a total failure?
No. I mean, what I want you to see is that last lady who had the beautiful memories of, as a newlywed, eating the chicken sauce at KFC, she said at the beginning, all the products I like are taken from the shelves. So we always remember, you know, food, because it's particularly memorable when we like food that other people don't. If you identify a lady like that, she is a good predictor about whether your new mop product or your new laundry detergent product will fail.
So she's actually valuable. That lady Rochelle is actually valuable to marketers.
She is incredibly valuable, because one thing I want you to notice, and this is one thing we found in the research which really helps you identify these people, is she said not just she liked this KFC sauce that no one else liked, but that once she tried it, she just kept on going back and back and back and back. And one of the strongest signals you are one of these harbingers of failure is that after you taste a product which everyone else thinks is terrible, you keep on going back and back and back and buying more and more and more. That pretty much suggests you're very valuable to marketers in terms of predicting flops.
Why had we not looked at this from this angle before? I mean, we often, marketers, do tons and tons of research into what people like. How come we're only now hearing about the, I hate using this phrase, it sounds so mean, but these harbingers of failure, these kiss of death people?
So one thing I found about marketing is we tend to be very positive people, and we tend to constantly focus on the idea of identifying who likes our products. And we use that to try and identify, well, who should we target and who's the right population for our group. So anytime we get data on people which is negative, which is about failure, which uses these words that make you uncomfortable, like harbinger of failure, then we tend to reject that or push that aside because we don't tend to think that is what marketing is about. So I think what's new about this research is saying actually looking at systematic patterns of failure can be as important as trying to understand systematic patterns of success.
Well, let's go back to the people that we spoke to here in Atlanta, because none of them, many of them admitted that they liked the products that ended up failing, but none of them wanted that title. Take a listen.
No, I'm not a harbinger of a failure because I don't like to fail, period. Thing about it is, things fail for a reason. Just different things, just what the demographic want, what the demographic need, what the consumer wants.
I don't think I'm a harbinger of failure. Every product I've liked has flourished, so I think I'm doing fine.
It's possible. Because I have eclectic taste, and sometimes I like things that are a little bit out of the ordinary and not necessarily mainstream items.
No, I'm not. Even though I am. Yeah.
I don't know if I would call myself. I feel like that happens to me. But I don't know if I would call myself or be a member of that group, per se. I didn't know that was a group that people identified with in general.
That's a sad group. I feel sorry for them.
Lonely Hearts Club.
So, and it does seem kind of depressing that you were talking about a group of people who will never get to keep what they like.
So I think that's a wonderful set of reactions. And I'll just tell you what I've heard too. I totally understand that in some ways we've codified or given a name to this feeling of continued depression that all the products you like are pulled from the shelves, which I think is a part of the negative reaction. In some sense, people also respond, I never knew that there were other people like me. I always thought it was just me who had these products pulled from the shelves that I liked, and I didn't realize that there was actually other people to whom this happened as well. So I agree people might not love the term or be being told that they are a harbinger of failure, but I think people are at least somewhat receptive to the idea that they are not alone and that there is some kind of explanation for what they've observed happening in their life before.
So what this sounds like to me, Catherine, is that after they go through that whole battery of tests and you're finally ready to, as you say, put them out on the shelves, they need one more test, which is to identify a group of people who are the kiss of death, present this product to them, and if these people enjoy it, stop the presses. Stop. Do not produce that product. Is that your advice?
That is certainly partly my advice. So at least I'd say set your expectations that this is going to be a niche product and should therefore not maybe be rolled out to Target and Walmart, but maybe just make it available on the internet or something like that. It's certainly not a product you want to try and invest in to make it a mainstream product, because it never will.
I guess in our day and age, where you can go on the internet through eBay or Pinterest or any of the other sites and kind of find everything you want, that if it is a niche product, maybe there's hope for someone who is a harbinger of failure. Maybe they will be able to find the things that they like, as long as the person, their business model is focused around only selling to a small number of them.
I think that's right. I mean, remember, our research was focused on the question of retail assortment. And in a retail assortment, you only really want to have products which have a chance of being mainstream, especially if you have limited store space. The wonderful thing about the internet, and maybe this is the hopeful or positive news for someone who's listened to this segment and thought, oh my gosh, I am a harbinger of failure, is that at least we have the internet now, which allows us to cater somewhat to more niche tastes.
And before, we only have about a minute or so left, but is there a chance that based on the research that you've done and the research that's coming, that companies will be able to use people like this to figure out what product will fail? I mean, is that how reliable this group is?
So let me tell you where it's going with companies. So first of all, without doubt, this is incredibly reliable as a prediction methodology. We have spent 3 years trying to make this result go away. It definitely isn't a statistical artifact. I think the question for us is we can easily identify these people in retail data, and that is when the products hit the shelves. What we haven't done yet, and that's where we maybe need to work, needs to figure this out, is how to use them in the pre-test, pre-product launch stage.
Are you a harbinger of failure, Catherine?
I am afraid so. I am like every one of those people you interviewed. This is a personal paper for me.
Can you name a product that you liked that disappeared?
I loved Crystal Pepsi.
Oh, no one loved Crystal Pepsi. Oh, boy. Okay.
I thought it was such a clever idea. Transparent Coke.
Okay, MIT marketing professor Catherine Tucker, self-described kiss of death. Catherine, it's really good to talk to you.
It was lovely to talk to you too. Thank you very much.